Do not be conformed to this world, but be transformed by the renewing of your mind, so that you may be able to prove what the will of God is, that which is good and acceptable and perfect. Romans 12:2. This is Resistance and Reformation on the Fight, Laugh, Feast Network. The assailant fired off nearly 30 rounds. He shouted, "Allah Akbar! Allah Akbar! God is great!" He turned on his heel and left the taxi driver to die. And thus, on February 17th, 2003, the Iraqi church had yet another martyr. Zawar Muhammad Ismail, a believer from the city of Saqqo, not only left behind a wife and five children, he left behind a remarkable legacy of faithfulness in the midst of adversity, discrimination, oppression, harassment, and persecution. Zawar, a Kurd, had come to saving faith in Jesus 7 years before. Faithful to and open about his faith, he had often been threatened and was twice arrested. Though practically illiterate, he had memorized large portions of the scriptures and served as a deacon in his fledgling evangelical church. According to his pastor, he was always very well aware, as are all of us in the church here, of the fact that at some point, martyrdom is likely. He accepted this without reservation. Now, I confess that when I first received the email reporting Zawar's death, I was shocked. But I know I shouldn't have been. Long ago, the Apostle Paul asserted, "All those who desire to live godly lives will be persecuted." There is no way around it. No amount of compromise can divert it. Persecution is inevitable. Jesus explained this fact to his disciples, saying, "If the world hates you, you know that it hated me before it hated you. If you were of this world, the world would love its own. Yet because you are not of the world, but I chose you out of the world, therefore the world hates you. Remember the word that I said to you, 'A servant is not greater than his master.' If they persecuted me, they will also persecute you. If they kept my word, they will keep yours also." Zawar understood, perhaps better than most of the rest of us, the ever-present danger of Christian profession in this poor fallen world. Everyone loves a winner. The sweet smell of success draws nearly all of us like moths to a candle flame. Popularity, celebrity, prominence, and fame are not only the hallmarks of our age, they are just about the only credentials we require for adulation or leadership. As a result, we are generally not too terribly fond of the peculiar, the obscure, or the unpopular. At best, we reserve pity for losers. In fact, we view with suspicion anyone who somehow fails to garner kudos from the world at large. If they have fallen prey to vilification, defamation, or humiliation, we simply assume that they must somehow be at fault. But there was a time when martyrdom was among the church's highest callings and greatest honors. The heroes of the faith have always been those who actually sacrificed their lives, fortunes, and reputations for the sake of the gospel. But no longer. There is almost a kind of shame that we attach to those who suffer persecution or isolation or oppression. If their cause does not meet with quick success, we are only too hasty to abandon them. Maybe they didn't try hard enough. Maybe they just made a couple of dumb mistakes. Maybe they had faulty theology. Maybe they just failed to marshal effective public relations techniques. But however they got into the mess that they're in, we're all but certain that they are not the kind of models we ought to follow. E.M. Bounds, the great 19th century pastor and evangelist who penned several classic books on prayer, asserted that it was all too often the case that when the church prospers, it loses sight of the very virtues from whence its prosperity has sprung. According to Bounds, those virtues invariably have sprung out of either the suffering of believers or their response to the suffering of others. Throughout history, Christians have suffered both fierce persecution and enforced obscurity. They have been beaten, ridiculed, defrocked, and defamed. They have suffered poverty, isolation, betrayal, and disgrace. They have been hounded, harassed, and murdered. All through it all, they bore testimony to the fact that they found solace in the realization of genuine hope, a hope that did not depend on the confirmation of worldly notions of success, a hope that did not need to adjust to the ever-shifting tides of situation or circumstance. They were able to comprehend that the blood, toil, tears, and sweat of the faithful are the seeds of real success, and that our diligent, unflagging efforts on behalf of the despised and the rejected are our most potent caveats to the worldly wise. Though that may be an alien notion to us today, it has been the common experience of virtually all those who have gone before us in faith. They tasted the bittersweet truth that the kingdom of heaven belongs to those who have been persecuted for the sake of righteousness, and that great blessings and rewards eventually await those who have been insulted, slandered, and sore vexed, who nevertheless persevere in their high callings. And so, though they often suffered the slanging ridicule and irate torments of the world, they remained steadfast, continued their course, and walked in grace. Like Zoar, they were willing to risk everything for the sake of truth. Our response to the fragrance of oppression, as historian Herbert Schlossberg has dubbed the persecutions and sufferings of our world, is perhaps the single most significant indicator of the health and vitality of the church. For it is in afflictions, hardships, calamities, beatings, imprisonments, tumults, labors, sleeplessness, and hunger that our mettle is proven. Bounds declared, "The easy smile, the temperate deportment, and the contented visage of prosperous Christians can but impress few, but the determined faithfulness, the long-suffering fellowship, and the stalwart compassion of yoke fellows in hardship is certain to convey the hope of grace to many. Everyone loves a winner." That's not all bad, as long as our understanding of who the real winners are conforms to biblical standards. But then, that's the rub, isn't it? I loved Zoar before, but now he's my role model for both resistance and reformation. I'm George Grant on the Fight, Laugh, Feast Network. For more information and for resources, go to georgegrant.net or adoringgod.org.